He's got pace to burn. He runs to 40. Goal unguarded. Bounces home.
Turns onto the right boot. In the right corner. Oh, that's good. Beautiful.
Grandstand. From 50, he lines it up.
Oh, they've pulled it late. This one's going down to the wire.
Grandstand.
Puts on the burners. Breaks a tackle. Snaps from 40. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Grandstand.
This is Anthony Lehman, and we have a massive show for you today. We'll be reviewing last night's cracker from the MCG. We'll be chatting with Supercoach Alistair Clarkson later in the show about last night's game and the state of the game generally. We'll be putting the blowtorch on the MRP's Michael Christian, who joins us later in the show as well. We'll also be going around the grounds to get the gossip in South Australia, WA, New South Wales and Queensland. Welcome to the show, Angela Pippos.
Hello, Limo. So much to talk about today.
There is indeed. Jake Nile from The Age. Hello.
Thanks, Limo. Ange, you would be a little bit mournful last night from last night, wouldn't you, Limo?
After, well, I was there last night, and it was
cold.
It was cold, and from a fan's, I mean, I know it was a good game. I know intellectually it was a good game, but that was a very difficult game to watch as a fan because you just never. Just never kicked two goals in a row. You never got on top. So it was stressful start to finish.
And what about the conditions? It was a really windy day in Melbourne. What was it like at night?
It was windy, very windy. You saw every inch of every flag that was up at the MCG. There was no flopping going on from the flags. A little swirly down on the ground, I guess. But the bonus of the bad weather is that I went to the game early because I thought traffic would be terrible. Friday night, bad weather. I've never got to the MCG so quick in my life. I was 10 minutes from home. I'd put a set aside 30 minutes for
it. Well, they'd closed the car park. So there was people went on public transport and the crowd, I think a lot of people were frightened off.
Yeah. So there were only 32,000 there last night, which is a small crowd for Friday night footy, but the weather was terrible. And I felt for Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. They did a pre-show performance last night. Not really. When you're used to performing inside a theatre, those conditions don't really... They did a great job, but those conditions don't really suit your performance.
But it was
performance.
To the neutral supporter, it was a tremendous game in terms of the drama and the story of Ronki.
Yes.
Ronk, sorry. Some say Ronki, some say Ronk. We'll get that sorted.
I think we should go with Ronki.
Ronki.
Let's just call it a nickname. It's either the correct pronunciation. If it's not, we'll say it's a nickname.
Well, Longmire called him Ronki. And also the Luke Parker incident. There was just, which we'll obviously talk to Michael Christian about later.
We will indeed. Well, before we get to Luke Parker, we'll speak about Luke Parker shortly, but I know, Ange, you've got a couple of MRP observations from the week that's been.
Yeah, that's right. Nick Natanui and Tom Hawkins. I'd like to talk about them because they didn't get the news that they wanted during the week, but it was the way they handled themselves and the way they handled the disappointment that struck me. I thought it was really lovely to hear and see, then say what they had to say. So let's start with Nick Natanui. The tackle has been talked about a lot during the week. Mm. He tried to overturn his ban at the tribunal. He wasn't successful. Let's recap the week that he had.
Ball put back into play, right of front position. Natanui, though, got a fist to it. Down towards Eamon, and Natanui just crunched him, and he'll give away the free kick. He absolutely drove him into the turf. The call was made immediately by the umpire in Ray Chamberlain. Just put a little bit too much on it, but pushing the back.
Each player must show a duty of care. Don't think that Nick showed a duty of care towards Carl Amon. The tackle was unreasonable in the circumstances in that he drove him into the ground with excessive force.
The way Michael handled it early in the week, so it was just a bit sloppy to go on every radio station and suggest it was the easiest decision he's ever made. I would have thought we could make that after the tribunal.
In the AFL, West Coast ruckman Nick Natanui says he's confused after being banned for one match for rough conduct by the tribunal.
Everyone's aware of the rules. Obviously, as players, we're obliged to look after each other and play in a reasonable manner, but there's going to be so many incidents where guys tackle. I'm sure I'll be in the same incidents in the future as well. So, yeah, I'll just look to go out and play my same sort of footy.
It is an absolute injustice.
Ooh.
And it's worse than that. It's a disgrace. And I say it's a disgrace. Michael Christian should know better. Now, when he said, we have decided, who's we for a start off? He's a big man. You should never penalise size. It is a monumental error by the AFL.
And a shout out to super producer Tess for a choice of song on that particular package.
Fabulous. And then Nick Natanui put a full stop on the whole story with this tweet, and this is what I liked. He said, obviously disappointed, but ain't no point complaining about it. Starvation, homelessness are real issues. We smile and move on. Happy for my boy, Fraser McGuinness, potentially gets an opportunity. So there you go, putting it all in perspective. Nick Nat, I liked it. Tom Hawkins, well then he challenged his making contact with an umpire charge at the tribunal. And here's what he said as he left.
Absolutely respect the umpires and their importance to the game at all levels. The tribunal came up with a decision today that was in best interest of the game, and I totally respect that.
Bravo. Two big men of the game doing the game proud.
Yeah, absolutely. And I thought, personally, I thought the Hawkins decision was a no-brainer for mine. You just can't touch the umpires, and that decision of that suspension made complete sense to me. The Nick Nat one, I'm still confused, and I can't wait to speak to Michael Christian a little bit later, because I agree with Adam Simpson. How do you expect a player to start summing up weight differentials halfway through a tackle,
Jack? Well, if I hadn't said that, if the AFL advocate hadn't said about the weight thing, I don't think this case would have attracted quite as much attention. Mm. I think that if they just said, look, he didn't show duty of care to the player, that's enough. You know, if you concuss a player in a tackle, you're going to be looked at. That's pretty much what's going to happen now.
Yeah.
They're going to get looked at, and they have to decide, was it an accident, or did you not show sufficient care for the player in executing the tackle?
But even an accident mightn't be sufficient defence.
Well, this whole definition of accident, we can go down a road here, an existential road. But
I didn't like the tackle. I thought he slammed him into the ground head first. That, to me, is pretty clear. So the debate around that I found a little mystifying. He could have rolled him to the side, and then Eamon's head and neck would have been protected. But all the commentary about the tackle being dead, we do this in this game. We just like to, you know, overstate problems, you know, all the time. Wild swings here because, you know.
Well, when someone gets rubbed out for a bump,
yep,
there's all these ex-players saying, oh, the bump is dead. We've been hearing that the bump is dead for 10 years, 15 years.
Everyone needs to calm down. Just calm down.
The bump has managed to live on. If you want to have your say, 043...
The zombie bump.
The zombie bump. It'll pop up in The Walking Dead soon. 0437 774 774. Hit us up on the SMS. Have your say. Do you agree with the Nick Nat decision? Do you agree with the Tom Hawkins decision? What's your view on Luke Parker? Should he be rubbed out after his bump on Jarman Impey last night?
Should we have our say on that now?
Well, this is how...
Before Chris O comes in and tells us what's happened.
Yeah. Chris O, well, let's hope they've made the decision by the time Chris O joins us. Yes. Here's how the grandstand team saw it last night.
Now Cunningham goes at it. He's tackled by Frawley. He's forced to get rid of it. Oh, there's a nasty head clash there. Charging in was the Swans player in Parker. And he's collected the head of the Hawthorn player, Impey, was it? And Impey's just clutching at his head, laying on the turf.
So Impey's laying on the ground. He was in all sorts. He was clearly collected him in the head. For mine, I can't see how Parker escapes suspension.
Yeah, I'm my instinct, I look at these things. First of all, you've got to look at fast motion, not slow-mo.
Yeah.
It is... you know, arguably in a grey area, but I think he gets a week. My instinct straight away is that's
what's
a week.
Gray? What's grey about it?
Oh, the ball's there. That's the only defence he's got is that the ball is so close, but he goes over. He ends up over the ball, Ange. Mm-hmm. By the time the momentum has carried him forward, his defence will be that he is in a contest for the ball. But I still think it's a week because Impey is in such an exposed position.
Hmm. I think, yeah, and Impey's got his head well and truly over the ball. And just, I mean, if you just look at the optics of it, how it looked, it didn't look good. You've got a player getting a head contact and then he's laying on the ground.
Head over the ball, don't bump.
No, and Ryan Burton, it'd be interesting to ask Chris O about that.
Yeah.
In light of this, if he ends up giving Parker a week, and then we look at the Ryan Burton decision, which I don't want to be a broken record, but...
Well, I hope Michael Christian is ready for the blowtorch.
And it's human nature, isn't it, to compare cases, even if it is apples and oranges. I mean, the number of times that Cochin has been mentioned since that event last year.
Spoken like a true Crows fan.
No, it's just like all roads lead to Trent Cotchin. We keep hearing about his particular bump. And, yeah, and you're right. Of course you're going to get comparisons with cases. It's just human nature. Lots of tweets and Facebook messages about this as well.
What are they saying? Keep yours coming through too on 0437 774 774. Already a few SMSs. One here says, you're obviously Victorians. What a load of rubbish. It's football. There's actually two South Australians and one Victorian in the studio. So there you go. So another SSM in Bendigo says, Tom Hawkins, yes, correct decision, but Nick Nat needs a review.
There you go. We're about 50-50 on the Luke Parker tweets and Facebook. Chris says there was nothing in it as they both went for the ball with arms down, but Hawthorn player hit ball between the Sydney player's legs, making it appear, according to this ridiculous snapshot. Luke says, a couple of weeks for sure, games turning into a joke. Dean, 1 to 2 weeks off fishing. Tim says 3 weeks. I like this one from Simon. We, the lifelong fans, have literally no clue. They say if you can't explain it to a six-year-old, you don't understand it. Imagine trying to explain AFL rules to anyone. I know, it is tricky. And Aaron says, well, it's a non-contact sport, so at least the rest of the season out. There's a bit of sarcasm in our tweets today.
Indeed, I've got another good one here saying next week Nick Nat is going to line up the Richmond players. But he's going to be told he can only tackle those over 90 kilograms.
Dan's gone the same way. The real question is, does he appear to have evaluated his opponent's size?
The scales.
That was a red herring.
The scales of justice.
Boom, boom.
Indeed. Well, we'll find out with Michael Krishna a little bit later exactly where the MRP stands on the Luke bump, the Luke Parker bump last night. Now, let's get back to Ben Ronke last night. What an extraordinary game three for this individual. Let's have a listen to how it rolled out at the G.
Grundy, a high kick to centre half forward, a pack of five, launching the back. Stratton didn't mark, roped in the pack by Robinson, got it out the side, and a shot at goal from Ronk, bounces home.
Papley sends it goalward, it's bouncing, it's rolling. Duray gets back there, socket off the ground by Ronk. Ronk's got two for the Swans. They're inside 50. O'Brien rises high in the marking contest. Spinning his way out of trouble there was Gunston. How good was that? It's goal for goal at the MCG.
Burgoyne spun into trouble, lost the ball, could have been pinged, was pinged. Play on to advantage now after the umpire initially looked like he wasn't going to pay it. And young Ronk may have kicked a third.
He's a man who's made himself a name.
Burgoyne's caught. The umpire says that's holding the ball. And guess who gets it? Ben Ronk. He hails from Essendon, playing his first game at the MCG. On the siren, splits the middle.
Ronk's got it, 55 out. Steps inside. McAvoy, he legged him there. Umpire saw it. Ronk played on. Ronk kicked the goal. No, you've not been on the plonk. That is 5 goals to Ronk.
He kicks on the outside of the boot. It sits at the pack here for Haywood. He trickles it and dribbles it through for a much-needed goal. And the Swans with the first in this last quarter. It is far from game over here at the MCG. It's Ronk. It's Ben Ronk. Little twinkle toes. Buddy who? Buddy, hell, Ben Ronk's got 6 goals at the MCG.
Roughhead loses front position, went through the legs of Grundy, hand pass Roughhead to Gunston. Gunston has 5.
I think the umpire's paid it. Lucks of fortune landed in the lap of Luke Parker. They trail by 3. He slots it over the goal umpire's head and he kicks that with purpose.
Sicily didn't go. Rowan wanted it most. Launches and marks. Ronk is lurking. Ronk's got it! He marks at the back of the pack in the goal square. Ben Ronk is going to kick 7 and celebrates like he's just won the Australian Open.
Sirens looming. There it is. And Ben Ronk produces an unforgettable night at the MCG. The 20-year-old rookie single-handedly drags the Swans over the line. They prevail by 8 points. Ronk, in his third game, has booted 7.
He's a man who made himself a name.
What a night for Ben Ronk. Longmire called him Ronky in the press conference, which I assume is a nickname.
Yep.
Ronky. Have we got, Tess, super producer, have we got some Ronky music? Close enough. How's some of the stats for last night? Get a load of this. Four Swans have kicked five first-half goals in the last 20 years.
Let me guess.
Only four.
Two of them are...
Who have you got for us, Jake?
Tony Lockett.
Correct.
Maybe Lance Franklin.
Correct.
Barry Hall.
Barry Hall. And...
Ronk.
Ben Ronk. Unbelievable. He's the first player for the Swannies to kick six goals against Hawthorn since Tony Lockett did it in 1998.
Mm-hmm.
Just amazing. And he is the first player ever in AFL, VFL history to have 10-plus tackles and 7-plus goals in the same game. It's extraordinary.
Fantastic.
From a bloke playing his third game of footy.
Also, I don't want to hear the coaches say, we don't care about the goals, it's only the tackles that count. Yeah. Actually, no, you don't win without the goals. They always say that, don't they?
The goals are fairly... Well, given that he kicked 70% of their goals, I reckon they're fairly important.
What is it about the Swans and unearthing all this talent? They had a heap of former rookies in that team last night. We've got other sides struggling to rebuild and to get their lists right. And the Swans just know how to do it, don't they?
I think a lot of it's the environment, Ange. I think they introduce players. There's always a senior core of players. And so it's not just, I've often wondered about Jack Watts. He was a number one draft pick, but he went to Melbourne when there was very few senior players. If he'd gone to Hawthorn, say, at that time, or Sydney, his career might have gone very differently.
Yeah. I think some clubs, you know, and Sydney's one of them, will turn not that I'm saying Ronk's a 5 out of 10, but just for example's sake, they'll turn a 5 out of 10 into a 7 out of 10.
Yep.
And Sydney's one of those environments.
They're a value-adding environment.
That will do that. 2016 rookie draft. They picked him up. He played 12 games in the NEAFL last year and kicked 14 goals.
Right.
He's played one Friday night at the MCG and kicked 7 against Hawthorn. So new was he to the MCG that he nearly got lost walking out onto the ground. Here's the coach explaining how he sorted him out. This is in the post-match presser.
Yeah, I was a little bit concerned before the game. I walked out of the coach's room and he was just about to walk in. I asked him where he was going and he said, I don't know how to get out in the ground. And so slipped my mind that he hadn't actually been here. So I hadn't played out of these rooms and so I had to guide him to get out in the ground. So I'm glad he found his way when he got out there. Ronke's had a fantastic impact on the scoreboard. Parker, Haywood, you know, when you get, you know, your two highest goal scorers are Haywood and Ronke. Tommy McCartan plays his first game. It's a pretty young front half, a fair bit of the game. Ollie Florent spent a bit of time up there. So you've got some kids, and as long as they compete, they'll put in some good ones and they put in some not-so-good ones, but hopefully they get better. We thought our boys had a real crack most of the game, to be honest. They had a real crack. We turned the ball over a bit too much at times, probably a bit in the third quarter, but their persistence was fantastic.
Jake, will Buddy Franklin have to come back in through the twos?
No. No, I think Lance will come straight in.
Yeah. And what about Sydney's record away from home this season?
Yeah.
Four wins, no losses. They're developing an away ground advantage.
Yeah.
It's strange, isn't it? It's a strange season. That's just another weird thing.
Yeah, but there is actually a theory, not to get bogged down into technical things, that they don't tend to play the wide ground as well as a narrow ground. Well, the MCG is fairly wide, so that's probably out the door as well. But that they're better at condensing the game, defending by condensing.
Well, they do very well on the road. The Gold Coast Suns would be wishing they had that record on the road, given they've been on the road since round one. Here's Ben Ronke, the young Swan superstar, chatting with the grandstand team last night.
Is it a pinch-me moment, Ben, that you're experiencing right now? What a debut on the MCG to kick 7 goals to be the match winner.
It's a pretty good feeling. It's always been a dream for me growing up to play on the MCG, ever since I can remember. And to get a win like that with the boys... go in with a game plan to make it a scrap and executing that and really playing to our strengths. There's just no better feeling.
Is it a surreal moment right now? You've bounced from TV interview to TV interview to radio interview and there's about 15 paper journos with their mics in your mouth.
Yeah, it's a bit surreal. Just try and answer the questions as best as I can. But yeah, it's a great feeling and to get it done with a group of blokes like that, yeah, I'm just stoked.
And 7 goals. How bloody good's that on the G?
Oh, incredible. I try to just base my game around pressure and just trying to bring that energy in the forward half. And if I can get on the end of a couple, it's always good. But a lot of them came from sort of the team's efforts to win the scrap in the forward half. And I was just lucky to be getting running past and getting on the end of a few.
Ben, what was the horse's first words he said to you after the game?
Yeah, he came up and shook my hand and said, well done, and gave me a bit of a rap, which is always good to get off the head coach.
Stevie J, Ben, I've got no doubt he'd be putting his hand up, mate, saying he's my boy. Is he getting around you?
Yeah, absolutely. No, Stevie's a ripper ever since he's come to the club. He's fit right in. All the boys love him. And, yeah, he just brings so much to that forward group. And you learn so much of a smart bloke like him.
Who of the forwards have you worked most with, Ben? Who's been a bit of a mentor for you?
I guess blokes like Tom Papley, who play a similar role to me, and Kieran Jack has been awesome as well. You just try and suck as much as you can out of those blokes because their footy smarts are incredible. And, yeah, if I can be half the players they are, I'm happy.
And you've always been a goal kicker, Ben. Fill us in a little bit about yourself. Have you, in junior footy, were you able to kick bags of goals, or you just wait for Friday night footy at the G versus the Hawks to just come out and kick goals?
I played probably more junior footy predominantly in the midfield, and as I said before, it's probably my go is just bringing that pressure and trying to play to my strengths of my speed, and yeah, it's always nice to get on the end of a couple.
I think what Andrew was asking you is, have you kicked more than 7 in a game of footy ever?
No, I don't think so.
No?
I think that's definitely up there.
In terms of your progression to the AFL then because you really didn't get your crack at under-18 level until you're a top-age player when you won a Calder Cannons Best and Fairest. Were there stages where you thought that this was a long way off? Do you sort of look at where you are now and think about the path that you had to take to get here?
Yeah, I think facing a bit of adversity in the path to get to where I am sort of really helped me, I guess, not having it come so easy. I've always tried to stay positive and believe that I can match it with the blokes that were getting picked ahead of me. And, I just sort of kept trying to stick at it and wait for my opportunity to present itself.
Anyone who helped you along the way, who helped instil that belief in you?
A lot of junior coaches that played a great role, but probably my old man was the main one. That's growing up, I spent a lot of time with him out the back in the park kicking and running around with the footy, so he can probably take the credit for that one.
What about family here? You said the journey started with Dad, kick to kick in the backyard, and then St Bernard's and Calder Cannons. First game at the MCG, who was here to see it?
Yeah, all the family got down, and I was lucky enough to have a heap of mates come down as well. Obviously, it's handy growing up in Melbourne, so it's not too far for them to come. But, yeah, it was great to have all them here and saw them as I was coming out the race. So having that sort of support goes a long way as well.
What was your dad's first words to you?
I haven't spoken to him yet after the game, but I'll definitely be giving him a call as soon as I get to my phone.
We better give you that chance. Ben, terrific to spend some time with you and just an absolute pleasure to watch you play tonight.
Appreciate it. Cheers.
That is the Swans superstar Ben Ronke after his 7-goal performance in just his 3rd game last night at the MCG. You are listening to Grandstand with Limo, Ange Pipos and Jake Noel. Keep those SMSs coming in on 0437 774 774. You can have your say on the Luke Parker bump, on the Nick Nat bump, on last night's game, on Ben Ronke's performance. They are coming through. SMS here says Nick Nat's tackle was illegal. Free kick paid. Can't defend that. 1 week was right. The tackle isn't dead, but illegal tackles will be penalised. Someone else says, I don't want to rain on your stats parade, but for how many years have we recorded the number of tackles? Well, you make a fair point there. So we should say it's the first ever 7 goals, 10-tackle game since
champion data.
Since tackles were recorded in games. And someone else says, Ronke should have got 8. He was burned on a holding the ball decision in the second quarter. So there we go. And someone else says, forget the 7 goals. Ronke had 10 tackles. That's Jeff. He says he's channeling Nathan Buckley right there.
And on Luke Parker, Cold Dog says, on a scale of 1 to Trent Cotchin, I think he's in trouble. There's Cotchin again.
Yeah.
Told you.
Let it go, Andrew.
I didn't say it. It's Cold Dog who said it.
There it is. And what about the Hawks, Jake? What did you make of their performance last night?
No, they were good. I don't think it'd be interesting to talk to Clarko about it, how he grades the performance, because they played well. It was a much higher standard game than most of the games we've seen this year, in much better conditions. The skills held up well. There's a lot of one touch. And just a couple of things happened. I mean, the free kick against Ruffhead, I think that was a correct decision. He was definitely, when you take an uncontested mark with about 6 players around you, that's a sign. You could see the players blocking.
Do you think the subsequent one that he missed out on was there? So there was one just after that where there was blocking against Ruffy in the goal square. This is what Clarko raised in the post-match press conference last night.
I need to be honest, Lim, I don't remember that bit. But I felt there was a couple that were, you know, questionable. But I thought Hawthorn had enough chances to win the game. The balance of play, you felt like they would win.
Yeah.
And that they got nutted at the end partly by Luke Parker, actually. I mean, Luke Parker, what a player he is.
Yeah, he really stood up.
And a mistake by Isaac Smith where he kicked a cross goal and there was a tremendous mark by Gary Rowan.
Great mark.
With the flight that led to the Ronke goal. It was such a game of millimetres, that one. And I think Hawthorn should go out of that game disappointed that they let it slip, because on balance of inside 50s and territory, it was such a different game. They won the territory battle, but they lost the contested ball battle. And Clarko really should be a little bit dirty on the contested ball.
Well, you look at the inside 50s, it was 63-39 in favour of Hawthorn. So, you know, they were getting plenty of the ball. They were getting it into the forward 50.
But funny, though, the contested ball, I think Sydney are about plus 20.
They were 20. Clearances were 29-40 in favour of Sydney last night. So we will speak to Alistair Clarkson very, very shortly. But right now, Matt Clinch is at the MCG. He'll be bringing us the Carlton Essendon game with the grandstand team. Matt, how are conditions there at the G? Is it all sunshine and lollipops?
Lemo, Ange, Jake, hello. Yes, it's far better than what we expected to be this afternoon. The sun's actually out at the MCG, so any Carlton fans who had pulled the curtains back hoping that it would be bucketing rain and perhaps a low-scoring affair, you may be a bit disappointed, because the radar suggests that the showers may not get here until later tonight. So maybe that will make it a more attractive game, but the one thing that stands out is the desperation for both these sides in trying to get a win. Carlton, well, their worst start to a AFL season, trying to chase that first victory. And Essendon, who just desperately are trying to get their season back on track, 2 wins and 5 losses. And if they couldn't beat Carlton this afternoon, well, it's hard to make too much of a case that their season will amount to much. So lots on the line this afternoon. And both sides are celebrating anniversaries. Carlton celebrating their 50th anniversary of the 1968 win over Essendon. The Bombers obviously making the most of their 25th anniversary of the 1993 Baby Bombers. So one set of supporter groups will be in agony tonight. I guess that'll be the big talking point.
Can you make a case for Carlton? Can they break through?
Absolutely. Yes, you can. I've seen a lot of Essendon over the last month, and they've been ordinary. They struggled to transition the ball from defence to attack. They're now without Joe Danaher. Maybe that will make them more dangerous and less predictable, but there's a lot of questions about the way the Bombers have been playing. Zach Merritt, who was their best midfielder last season, well down on his numbers. So if Carlton can restrict their ability to move the ball with ease, then it could become a low-scoring scrap. And they've got the likes of Harry Mackay, who's come in and had an influence. Great to see Ed Curnow playing well in the middle of the ground as well. So you could make a case that if it is low-scoring, if it's tight, Carlton can definitely create enough headaches to get Essendon nervous, and perhaps they might play right into their hands.
Matt, what do they do about the no Danaher? Do they just play Cale Hooker deep, or do they bring a smaller player, go unconventional? What do they do?
Yeah, you could probably answer that as well as I could, Jake, in terms of what will they do with Orazio Fantasia? Will they play him at half forward? Will they use him and try and present a smaller forward line, which perhaps makes them more deadly, a little bit similar to Sydney last night? Or will they really emphasise trying to get that speed back in the middle of the ground and their transition and moving the ball from defence to attack? I'd be surprised if they started Hooker in attack this afternoon, given he played in defence last week, but John Worsfold probably feels like he needs to make a change or two. And Dyson Heppel's the other one who he's played a lone hand in the midfield. So he's going to need a few other contributors in order to try and get that ball movement back to the level in which we saw it last season.
And John Worsfold been criticised for his predictability in recent weeks. Do you think that's reasonable, Matt?
Well, I think they just haven't made enough changes during games. It's probably the one thing you would sit back, not inside the Bombers camp, and question, well, why don't you try this or why don't you try that? And that's easy to do from the outside. Sean McKernan gets his opportunity this afternoon. He had a great preseason, but finally breaks through for his first game. So whether he's actually ready to come in and have an influence in a game. But you've got to say that the additions of the players, Devon Smith has probably been the one who stood out. Adam Sard's done a reasonably good job. And Jake Stringer, I think, has brought to the table in what he did to the Western Bulldogs last year. So I think most people thought with the addition of those three players, Essendon would be a much better side. It just hasn't worked out like that.
So, Matt, who's going to be singing the song at the end of the day?
I've tipped the Bombers. That's not to say that Carlton can't provide an upset, but I just think now that there's no rain, I think that'll play into Essendon's favour.
All right, Matt Clinch, thank you very much. Happy cooling there with the grandstand team at the MCG. That is, of course, the Carlton-Essendon game. It's going to be massive, this game. A lot of eyes in this game and a lot of interest because it's so important for both those teams.
There's a new breed of game. Well, not new breed. There always have been. But in the media, we highlight them more where the consequence for the loser, the dread of defeat, is actually what's at stake more than the joy of victory.
Yeah, although, I mean, if Carlton can break their duck, that'll be a pretty joyous victory, I've got to say.
They'll bring the trainers into the circle, I reckon.
The whole club, they'll sing the song twice. The bad news keeps coming in for the Bombers, though. Marie, there's already a story up on afl.com.au, and get ready for a few of these stories this week. It seems that Essendon had a chance to recruit Ben Ronk, but passed on him. So I imagine every club at some point would have had access to him, given that he went in the rookie draft in 2016.
Oh, Tim Kelly. You know, Tim Kelly's Geelong is 23.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he's been overlooked over and
so
over and over again.
So many stories, what ifs and buts and all of that.
There are plenty. Let's head up to the Sydney Showground Stadium, where the ABC Grandstand team will be bringing us GWS v West Coast. Corbin Middlemas, hello.
Afternoon, team. Great to be with you.
Corbin, how are we looking there? GWS, they've got an injury list that looks like the All-Australian team, yet still they dropped a pattern this week.
Yeah, that's a little bit surprising, and you'd have to go inside the coaching philosophy of this, and we've got Jared Crouch and Michael Malthouse with us this afternoon, but clearly they think by dropping him they can get more of a spike out of him in the long term, but clearly in the short term they're not a better team with Patton out of the side, regardless on what sort of form he's in. He's actually just backing back towards the goal square now, and that's rushed through in front of him, so the knee fall is playing, and that's when John Patton is playing at the moment in the curtain raiser here between the Giants and the Swans. So they go in today without him. I think the thing that is sort of lasting in the memory is their performance last Friday night, which was probably the Giants' worst game since they've been a finals team against Geelong down at the Cattery. They obviously only kicked four goals, but previous to that, as we've touched on in this segment, they have been sort of getting wins by hook or by crook earlier in the year with a similar cast. So they've had this long injury list all year and have been able to scrape through and build wins and get themselves to 4.5 wins after six rounds in the season. And obviously last week's performance against Geelong is really the key outlier in their year. Surprisingly, as far as the bookmakers go, they are a short price favourite today, even though I think most people feel, given the guys out for both teams, this is a pick'em type match. The West Coast Eagles, when they were last sighted without someone like Nick Natanui, they were just a team scraping to try and make it into the eight. He's obviously out through suspension. You also throw in their All-Australian in Jeremy McGovern and Luke Shuey. Probably just brings the two teams back to even keel.
Corbin, Leon Cameron said that Patton needs to improve his forward craft. What exactly did he mean by that? It's a strange... I've never heard that expression before.
Well, it's also surprised me a little bit because the games that I've seen him play this year, he's played a lot in the ruck. They obviously haven't had Rory Lobb since round two. That for whatever reason, they've decided that Dawson Simpson isn't their guy, so he's not getting an awful lot of game time, and he spends a lot of time up the ground, obviously, such is the way with modern footy, where the whole field sort of... the 36 players out there sort of shift from one end of the ground to the other, but... He hasn't been playing in that traditional role, even despite the fact that Jeremy Cameron missed last week. And as I said, because of the no Lob and Mumford's retirement, he's probably had a bit of a different role than what we're used to. And that's probably one that you'd have to sort of be inside the inner sanctum to be able to answer.
Corbin, the outs for the West Coast are pretty significant. You look at Shuey is their best midfielder, Nick Nat, their most valuable player, and their best, one of the comp's best defenders in Jeremy McGovern. So it's hard to weigh them against the Giants' outs.
And that's the thing with West Coast, Jake, where I think we all sort of have underestimated them all year. So they come here with a 6-1 record. Again, we're sort of talking about do they need to frank their form with a victory on the road? And they come here without three of their better players. It's really hard to sort of put a line through their season. Their only two road wins, they beat the Western Bulldogs back in round two, and we know the Dogs are sort of no great shakes. And Carlton, they were dragged sort of kicking and screaming over the line to get that win by 10 points at the MCG. So they come up against a team who clearly we think are going to be a top eight team despite their long injury list. How are they going to go this afternoon and how does their footy stack up on the road without three of their big names? As I touched on earlier, the last time we saw them without Nick Natanui, which was the entire 2017 season, yes, they'd made the finals and won one, but I don't think anyone mistaken them for a premiership contender anywhere along the line. Mm-hmm. And with a record of 6-1 sitting second on the table, they would probably have claims to think that they should be in that conversation. So I think we're going to find out an awful lot about both these teams this afternoon, and a really tough one to pick despite the sort of lopsided betting market.
Who are you tipping, Corbin?
Oh, I had this conversation. I'm obviously hailing from the West. I've got a lot of friends and family from WA, but had this conversation with a few friends on the way. And I think the Giants still, just because they have won games under similar circumstances this year, I want to see it from West Coast live. Obviously, we've sort of watched some of their games on the television, and I've underestimated them the whole way through. So I feel I may as well be wrong today as well on the West Coast Eagles. If they can surprise me, good on them this afternoon.
All right, Corbin Middlemas, thank you for calling the game there at the Sydney Showground Stadium with the Grandstand team. You can listen to that one on the AFL app. You are listening to ABC Grandstand.
25-11-16 to 8-9.
They had, I think it was up to three times as many possessions.
Yep. 70 yep. to get the ball inside 14 times and score 8. 88 possessions for 14 times. And again, that's not excessive.
11 inside 50s, and yet we're only able to score 1 goal 2 to 3 goals 2.
22 more possessions, 382 versus 360.
Keep those SMSs coming in on 0437 774 774. You listen to Limo, Ange, Pipos and Jake Nile on ABC Grandstand. And it's time for a segment that people demand every week.
Stat of the week.
Yes. Now, what have you got, Ange?
Well, as we know, Joe Danaher will miss the next month of football. I love this stat for so many reasons. This will be only the third time in the last 50 years where Essendon have played four consecutive matches without at least one Danaher, Fletcher or Watson in the team. And that's thanks to Sir Swamp Thing on Twitter for that stat. I love it. I love the history. I love the bloodlines and the crazy, meticulous research that went into that stat. It just impresses me on so many levels. It's wonderful. It's a standout.
It is indeed. My stat of the week is that now we put a lot of pressure on coaches, don't we, Jake? It's a lot of focus. As
yeah,
you say,
there is quite a bit.
When they lose, we start to put the blowtorch on coaches. If Essendon lose today, people are going to start talking about John Worsfold.
Well, they've got a contract, though, so...
There's been a lot of focus on Nathan Buckley over the years, Brendan Bolton as well. Well, here's a stat that might just relax people for a moment. The English Premier League. We are nothing like this lot. The English Premier League in season 2017-2018, 20 teams in the EPL, by the way. Have a guess how many managers they sacked over the course of that season. In season, not at the end of the year, in season.
10.
You are exactly correct.
I'll give you another stat, and this is, I haven't prepared this, but I just know it. When was the last time the Geelong Football Club sacked a coach?
When was the last time the Geelong Football Club?
The Geelong Football Club. Now, bear in mind, Carlton, as Patrick Smith put it well, said that they, you know, don't just get rid of their coaches, they do them with fava beans and a nice Chianti. It was well put. When did Geelong last sack a coach?
I suspect it's a long time ago. Did Gary Ayres?
1988.
Sacked. It was 1988.
So it's 30 years, and that was John Devine. And he was replaced by Malcolm Blight, who stepped down of his own volition. Gary Ayres went and got the Adelaide job. Yep. Mark Thompson had burnout. Left. They haven't sacked a coach.
Good record to have. And joining us now is a coach we love, especially if you're a Hawthorn Football Club fan, Alistair Clarkson. Hello.
G'day, Lima. How are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm very, very well, Clarko. Thanks for your time today. Hey, tell us, how do you spend a Saturday morning after Friday night footy? Is it quiet time with the family, read the paper, game analysis, ice bath?
Well, the horrifying part after a loss, Limo, is if when your eyes first wake up, which sometimes can be 5 o'clock in the morning, if you've won, you'll go back to sleep. If you've lost, you can't get that bloody game out of your head. So I woke at 5 this morning and... had the game stewing over in my mind, but that's the life of a coach. You try to move on as quickly as you possibly can. You've got obviously a family and kids with school sport and that sort of stuff. So Friday night games are great in a sense, as you get the game out of the road and then you can actually have some family time on the weekend, which is good. But it's always a little bit tough when you've had a close loss the night before.
Pulls the focus a bit. So when you woke up at 5 in the morning and the game was stewing around in your head, was there a particular moment or a particular statistic that was running around in your head?
Yeah, probably the main thing was just how easily we were able to allow the Sydney side to score in the few times that they got in there. You know, have a statistic of 69 inside 50s to 39. You know, in you know, 90% of the games are footy. If you've got that statistic, you're absolutely stoked with the way that your team's playing. But to lose a game from there also suggests that when they did get it in there, they probably scored too easily. And that was we just bemoaned that a little bit, that you know, we were really well positioned behind the ball at different stages to defend really well, and yet you know we allowed some ground level balls out the back that the smaller Sydney players, particularly one smaller Sydney player that we didn't know too much about before last night. He snuck up us and took his chances and kicked seven goals in an 11 goal performance, which is a pretty special effort by the kid.
Difficult to pull together detailed opposition analysis on a two gamer, Clarko.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't use their capability, but but it was more probably Papley and Haywood and these sorts of guys that we probably put a little bit more time into. But it wasn't like the way teams defend, and particularly our team defend at different stages, you never really got one bloke just tying down a player. And really, it's just we rely on our whole defence to be able to defend those balls. And, you know, countless times we made errors with either, you know, dropping marks that should be taken or not spoiling aggressively enough and clearing the area. And that gave what we call soft crumbs, which is a ball that just drops at the feet of the marking contest and allows the small Sydney players to feast on that crumbing ball. So if we'd have either marked the ball or cleared the area, we'd have been much better served. And that was a part of the game that we're disappointed with, and was the part of the game that kept me awake at 5 a.m. this morning, Lemo.
Hopefully you'll get an afternoon nap. Alistair, in the post-match presser, you highlighted the inconsistency of how the blocking rule is applied. What was your particular beef with that?
Yeah, I've just got a concern. It reared its head last night in our game, needless to say, against the Sydney side that defend very, very sophisticatedly.
In a sophisticated way.
Sophisticated way. How am I going? Sophisticatedly.
You can invent as many words as you want.
Jeez. your mind scrambled in this game. Don't be a coach, guys.
It's the lack of sleep.
Yeah, they defend in a very, very disciplined and sophisticated way. And part of that is, unfortunately, in my view, in terms of the game, they don't defend the ball in the back end, they defend the body. And the game and the rules of the game have allowed that to creep in over a long, long period of time. Because defenders who used to, some years ago, try to defend the ball, and then that rule came in that said, well, you can't chop the arms because we want forwards to mark the ball more. I said, well, if we can't chop the arms, then we're just going to focus all our attention on the body. And it makes it very, very difficult. If you look at any team in the competition who's got a young player like a McCartan, number one draft pick, a Tom Boyd, number one draft pick, Shacky, number two draft pick. Now, these are unbelievably talented kids at junior level, mark the ball, kick goals, and they're exactly what our game looks for. So that's why they get drafted high. And then they get to senior AFL footy, and they can't get a game. You know, young Hipwood, Bratlin, you know, these slight bodies trying to come up against the 100-kilo Heath Grundy, who can bench press a 150-kilo. And it's very, very hard if all they're doing is pressing against the body to actually get a chance to run at the ball and catch it. And I bemoan that in our game, because our game, for mine, is all about high marking and scoring goals. And you know, last week's game, for instance, pretty good conditions. Sydney versus Kangaroos, SCG, 9 goals each. Yeah, you got
Clarko.
You got Brown at one end and. You know, guys at the other end, like, although Buddy didn't play last week, and we're finding that guys like Hogan and Franklin and these guys, if they can't use their height in the front end, they say, well, let's get up on the wing and hopefully we can create some space behind us and we'll use our engine to run back onto a ball inside 50 in a paddock. And for mine, that's not the way that the game should be played.
Just on the way the game should be played and adjudicated, Alistair, what was your view of the Luke Parker bump?
Well, I'm going to be pretty shy on that one, Jake, because it's a report. So, you know, my understanding of the rules is no one can have, except for you guys,
yep,
no one from within the game can have comment on an issue that's been reported.
Okay, can you answer this? Can you say this then? Are you clear on what is a legal bump and not? Because you had the Ryan Burton situation, you've got this one. As a coach, are you clear? We'll be talking to Michael, yep, Christian soon. Are you clear on what's okay and what isn't?
Yep.
What is okay?
Well, if you legitimately go to bump a player, but my understanding is if a player's heads over the ball in that manner and he chooses to bump, then you've got a duty of care to the player whose head's over the ball.
Right. And how is Jarman?
He came back on the ground, so he was okay to return to the field.
You've got the competition committee. You're not on it. We spoke to Justin Reeves last night. He said he wanted to see talent pathways looked at. Is there something that you're particularly passionate about, even though you're not on it, that you would like to see them pick up?
Yeah, I was just on 3AW before, ironically enough, so I'll get a fair run, so I might as well give you guys a scoop as well. I am very, very passionate about where our game is right now, where it's been and where it's going. And part of that is significantly around the rule book that was written 100 years ago. And there's been some changes to the rule book, like in the 70s, you know, KB and those guys who used to throw the ball out in front of them and try and get a holding the man decision because they weren't in possession. They changed that rule back in the 70s, but sometimes rules have been changed, like the centre bounce, which have been good for the game, and some other rules like the slide under, and now this rule, you know, bumping when a player's head's over the ball. Most of the rules, to be fair, are around protection of the player in terms of injury, and I think they've been legitimate and good changes for our game. But there's been a lot of creep in our game, sophisticated coaching, sophisticated playing. These are guys who want to win, and so they will try to bend whatever rule they possibly can. Yet there are some rules in the game that say, if you dispose of the ball incorrectly by hand or foot, it's a free kick to the opposition if you're being tackled. And for mine, if we just paid some of those free kicks, it would clear the game of some of the congestion that I've got, and it would then give us an opportunity to move the ball to contest, see the exquisite foot passing that we used to see the exquisite classical wingmen that used to play the game, like the Keith Greggs and the Robbie Flowers and the Peter Matiras and in the early part of his career, the Robert Murphys. We're just not seeing the beautiful, majestic wingmen. We're not seeing the in and under rover like a Johnny Platton or a Gary Wilson, a Dale Waitman. We've lost the second ruckman, and we're now starting to lose key forwards. And for mine, that is a huge, huge red flag to say what's happening to our game, because we're taking the game towards having one big tall ruckman that now needs to be a dinosaur. If he's not over 200, he's in trouble. We haven't got a second ruck. We've got about 3, 4, 5, 6... but maybe even 7 guys that are 6'2" or 6'3" and about 92 kilos that play through the midfield. So we've lost our classical wingmen, ruck rovers and rovers. And the other guy that's come into vogue, which we've always had, but he's just there in abundance now, is the mosquito, particularly one up forward, who has got sensational leg speed and can run to space. And for mine, in terms of the charter of the game and what we thought was a great feature of our game, is that the Australian rules footy, unlike basketball, can attract all sorts of shapes and sizes. And unfortunately, I reckon we're getting down to that shape and size only being about 3 types of body type now.
So, Clarko, from your perspective, it's not so much a rule change, but it's the interpretation of the incorrect disposal rule that you would crack down on.
Oh, there's so many areas of a game. You know, I've spoken about them all at different stages. You know, the shrug of the shoulder, the drop of the knee. Why are players doing that? Because they can milk a free kick. The players are very, very sophisticated. If they know that there's an angle that they can get composure on the ball with by winning a free kick, they're going to take it. It's no different than when we were kids and we were playing cards with our brothers and sisters or mates, and you wanted to win. And whatever, if you were playing cards and you're playing Uno and someone's got a yellow card in their hand and they knock, and if you can see their card in their reflection of a window or a mirror, are you going to change suit or are you going to play by the rules? I know everyone wants to win. I know what they're going to do. And it's the same with the game of footy. In the last, in round two when we played Geelong, Ruffy kicked the point to put us a point in front. And the ball, we knew that Tui was going to kick the ball straight down the middle. Joel Selwood gets the ball, the front and square, which is fantastic positioning. Very, very smart player. He knew where he was going. Between him and the goals was Jager O'Meara. Now, in the past or in perhaps the 70s, a player would use a blind turn or a balk or a fend off or something to try to get past Jager O'Meara. Joel, because he's become so very, very good at it, sophisticated, smart, he just says, I'm not going to bother about a blind turn, not going to bother about a fend off. I'm not even going to try and balk this bloke. I'm just going to try and drive straight through him because it's enormously difficult for Jager to do anything else except try to tackle him and have head-eye contact. And so that's the way the game's been policed. And unfortunately, that creep, whether it's to do with blocking and marking contests, whether it's to do with incorrect disposal, whether it's to do with shrugging of the shoulders or dropping of the knees, there's a whole heap of things that have just been milked by players and coaches that is having a great impact on the game. Now, if it didn't have impact on the features of the game and it didn't have impact on the type of player that we could attract to the game, then I wouldn't probably be too concerned about it. But those two things I'm deeply concerned about because love this game. I've grown up with it and I want it to be the best it can be. And, when rules like the slide under rule come under, we had two or three of the best slide under players in Jordan Lewis, Sam Mitchell and Luke Hodge. We took advantage of that slide under or lack of slide under rule, probably more so than any other club because we're tough and tenacious and it wasn't a rule in the book. But as soon as I saw Gary Rowan break his leg up in Sydney. This has got nothing to do with what's best with Hawthorn, what's best for the game. And I won't say that I drove that rule change, but when it was asked of would we support it, my hand was up straight away because it's not about what's best for Hodgie or Mitch or Louis. It's what's best for the game. And in that instance, I think that rule change has been terrific. You know, I've seen far less ankle injuries, broken legs, medial ligaments, and that sort of stuff as a result. And same with the PCL. And Neil Danaher, to his credit, pushed for that rule change, knowing full well it was probably going to be difficult for Jeff White to have the same impact in games.
He really needed it. Sorry, Clark, I'm going to have to jump in. We have to go to the news very, very shortly, but thanks for your time today. We really appreciate it. And you've got Brisbane next week. Will there be any text messages between you and Hodgie during the week?
Probably. There'll probably be something between our players and him and also me and Faith too. So no, it'll be a great contest. We're looking forward to it.
All right. Alistair Clarkson, thank you so much for your time this morning. SA listeners, you are off to the footy. For everyone else, we'll be chatting to Michael Christian from the MRP.
Grandstand.
It's Limo here with Ange Pipos and Jake Nile from The Age for the next half an hour, we'll be chatting with Michael Christian and we'll be going around the grounds to find out what's happening around this great country of ours. Keep those SMSs coming in on 0437 774 774. Have your say on some of the match review panel findings, what you think should happen to Luke Parker, last night's game, Ronkey's cracking game. Feel free to comment on any of these things. Herb from Q says on the SMS, retired footballers continually lament softening or the sanitisation of modern football, observing that players will always get hurt in Australian football. And while there's truth in that, we want, within the great features of the game, to minimise injury. And I think he makes a fair point there, Ange. But let's go to the man in question. He is Mr. P. He is the match review office. Michael Christian, hello.
G'day, Limo. G'day, Ange. Hi, Jake.
Hi, Chris.
Hi, Michael. How are you? Holding up well?
Yeah. You're going very well.
Chris, before we get into specific cases that we've seen this week and one you're no doubt looking at right now, do you read or listen to much of the commentary that goes on in the media around the decisions made by the MRP?
Limo, it's sometimes hard to not catch bits and pieces here and there, but I don't, as a rule, tune into every radio station or watch every television show. But I mean, it's hard. I mean, it's obviously, they're obviously big talking points, so you can't ignore it altogether, but don't consciously go out and watch shows or listen to radio or for that matter, read too much.
There's a lot of interest in the Luke Parker case. Have you made a decision yet?
No, it's still concluding. Hopefully by around 3 o'clock, I think, 3 o'clock, 3:30 this afternoon, we'll have the result of that. Plus, there was a number of other incidents that were looked at last night as well.
Can you tell us the factors that you're considering in the Parker case? Is that something you can talk about?
There's certain provisions. I can't go into too much detail. I'm sorry, Ange, but there are certain provisions around front on bumping, but also around contesting the ball. So if you are, if anyone is adjudicated to be contesting the ball and has no genuine alternative way to contest the ball, then that would be okay. But at the same time, there are provisions around front on contact as well.
It's been compared by people to the Trent Cotchin case. Do you see them as at all similar, or do you think this one's more front on?
I don't think there's many similarities, to be honest, Jake. This one's more front on. Certainly in deliberations, that hasn't been part of the discussion.
Do you, during your deliberations, do you look at other cases or do you assess each case absolutely independently of previous assessments?
No, particularly when it comes to impact, Limo, I think there's certainly, because as you can appreciate, with four categories of impact, low, medium, high and severe, within each category there is a range. So we do look at precedence in terms of measuring impact and what that looks like, but when I first accepted the job, a mate of mine said to me, "You've just got to be consistent and you'll be right." And I said, "Well, that's great advice. Thank you very much for that." The reality is that no two incidents are the same. The definition of consistency is when you've got exactly the same incident and you rule in the same way, then you're consistent. But which I found quite funny, but the reality is, yes, we do use precedents to try and, particularly with regard to impact, and that's certainly taken into consideration.
And Chris, how much do you and Steve Hocking talk about the message a particular incident sends to the community, especially to parents? Is that something that gets discussed?
Ange, it's more about my role, and then Steve Hocking obviously comes over the top of that. Mm. My role is to make adjudications based on the rules and the guidelines that's set out by the AFL. So, you know, with all the cases that we've looked at all year, it comes back to what the guidelines are, what the the framework is around the rules and guidelines to, you know, to make a decision.
Michael, when you sent the Hawkins case to the tribunal, did you have a view on suspension, or were you almost sending it to them to decide whether there should be a suspension?
Jake, under the rules, under the guidelines, there's two provisions with respect to umpire contact. The first is careless, which we've seen a lot of this year, and that mainly relates to when umpires bounce the ball, particularly in the centre square, and are backing back. We often see some contact made, with depending on where the ball is after the bounce, which direction the ball is heading, etc., etc. Then the other aspect to it is intentional contact. So we made the call at the time that we believed that Tom Hawkins intentionally touched the umpire. Now, under the guidelines, there's no discretion. There was no need and no need to grade. It's automatic, straight to the tribunal.
Okay.
So that's under the guidelines. There was no other way. Once we found that it was intentional contact with an umpire, it was straight to the tribunal.
Okay. The Nick Nat decision has been very contentious. Did you feel it was in a grey? It was a difficult one to work out, or was it clear cut?
Well, I mean, the guidelines around tackling are, from an overriding provision, it's whether the tackle is unreasonable in the circumstances. But then it gives a whole range of, if you like, specifics about tackling. And the relevant one for the Nick Natanui case was where an opponent is driven into the ground with excessive force. So on watching the video from a whole range of angles, going through that whole process, whether that was in normal speed and slow motion, etc., then it was determined that he drove Carl Lamont into the ground with excessive force.
Mm. If you have a view on any of this, hit us up on the SMS 0437 774 774. Chris, Adam Simpson was not happy during the week with your findings on Nick Nat, but he also was grumpy about some commentary that you had earlier in the week where you said it was an easy call. Do you regret saying it was an easy call suspending or reporting Nick Nat?
Yeah, there's a really broad discussion, Limo, about the commentary. It's interesting because in my involvement over the last 3 years in the match review panel, we're an independent body, and we were told not to make comment about any decision, and in for fear that, you know, it might prejudice the tribunal. Steve Hocking has taken a different approach with that, with a view that he would like decisions explained so that it helps at least, look, not everyone, we understand not everyone's going to agree, 100% of the people aren't going to agree with all the decisions, but at least if you can explain the decision, then it helps people understand. And one of the major criticisms of the AFL and certainly of the match review panel is that the findings were released and then there was no further comment. And particularly under the scenario where there wasn't too many tribunal appearances last year. So I think it's a really good idea. I think what happens when a club goes to the tribunal like West Coast and Nick Natanui did, there's three independent tribunal members. They get to the tribunal, they hear all the evidence from both sides, they watch all the vision that is available. Both parties, both West Coast and the AFL, can put their case to the three tribunal members, and then they go away and they make a decision on what they think is the right call according to the AFL guidelines and rules. So whether I make a comment or Jake Nile makes a comment in The Age about whether Nick Natanui should or shouldn't be suspended, or whether someone else makes a comment, the reality is it's up to those three tribunal members to make a call on the evidence that is presented at that tribunal hearing.
And Michael, another part of that case that got people talking was the conversation about Nick Nat's weight and height difference. Does that duty of care extend to considering the weight and height differentials between players?
And that was a discussion for Jeff Gleeson and QC, of course, representing the AFL. My role is to look at evidence which I'm able to access, and that mainly relates to a medical report, and mainly relates to vision. And then occasionally, if the need arises, I've got the capacity, we've got the capacity to talk to one of the AFL investigators to perhaps ask a player a question or two if there's something that we're really not sure about, or the vision is not really clear. So that's my role. And then once I refer my thinking to Steve Hocking, and then we agree on what the sanction should be, if there is a sanction, then that's the end of it for me. My then role is to try and help explain why that decision's been made. Mm. The tribunal is the tribunal. It's something completely independent from me. So that's something that that Jeff Gleeson obviously said representing the AFL, but that's beyond my sort of area of or my role.
Mm-hmm. We're talking to Michael Christian, match review officer. You've got some support here on the SMS. Chris O'Darren in Northcote says, I think the rules do say that one player shall not use another player for minerals exploration in relation to the knick-knack tackle. But this question for you, Chris, from Larry in Eden Park. Can you please ask Michael the difference between the knick-knack tackle and the one laid on Jackson McRae last Saturday? I didn't see the Jackson McRae tackle. But
Who laid that tackle on Jackson McRae?
I don't know. Larry's just sent that question through. But
a Gold Coast player.
Yes.
Yeah, not sure.
I'm guessing it wasn't reviewed then. Brendan Crossley. Crossley.
You know what, Limo? At the end Braden of the day, at the end of the day, there's we probably have, per round, there's probably 40 or 50 incidents that we look at. So we've probably looked at, How many games we played? 350 incidents. So I'm sorry, I can't recall that one exactly.
Right. Okay.
Sorry?
I was going to say, Michael, is it fair to say on Knick-Knack that Nat Nui would not have been suspended if not for Amon's concussion?
Okay, so, Jake, it's pretty... The way we go about it is the first assessment we make is on conduct. So the first assessment is whether this was this tackle, and the guidelines around dangerous tackles say that, was this unreasonable in the circumstances? And then, as I said earlier, you go to the specifics. Did Nat Nui drive Amon into the ground with excessive force? So once that decision is made and we deemed it to be unreasonable in the circumstance, therefore rough conduct, therefore careless. So once that decision is made, then we go to impact. Now, if Amon gets up and has no concussion, and then there may well have been, if it got to low impact, there would have been a fine. Or if there was absolutely no impact, there may have been, we would have passed it off as maybe a free kick. But the important thing to remember is that the conduct is the first thing that's assessed. And once that is deemed, in this case, we deemed it to be careless, then it's a question of going to the impact. There are situations in our game where players get concussed, but because the player causing the concussion, for example, was contesting the ball and had no genuine alternative way to contest the ball, then we don't even get to the impact stage because he passes on the conduct test, if that makes sense.
Gotcha.
Chris, so James Sicily had a chat to the umpires as he was walking off the ground last night. Are you guys looking at that today?
That's on our list of things to look at, yes, Limo.
Right. Have you made any findings today yet?
No, I haven't been concluded as yet, mate. And I'd love to be able to go through it all, but probably I'd say in a couple of hours we should be concluded.
All right. We look forward to hearing from you then. Thanks for your time. We'll let you get back to those discussions. That is match review officer Michael Christen.
He's had a hectic start to the year. I just wonder if he can go to a barbecue without being bombarded with questions.
My life
must be very different for my friend Michael now.
I suspect he's not checking his Twitter account too much.
Good on him for talking. That's great.
All right, it's time.
What do we read into those comments about Parker?
Oh, that's a dangerous game to try and read into.
It's too hard to say.
And mind.
I've been told on the SMS that I can't speak impartially as a Hawthorn fan. And you've probably made a reasonable point on the SMS.
Well, he did, just to recap, he did say it's not like the Cochin
one. Yes, he did. More front on.
It's more front on, which is what Matthew Richardson said in the call of the game.
So perhaps a nervous wait over the next couple of hours for Luke Parker. Let's head around the grounds.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Sydney Cricket Ground where the sun is beating down.
Welcome to Perth Stadium. Brett Sprigg with you.
A glorious Saturday afternoon in Brisbane. In a big country
dream, stay with you. And in a very happy Adelaide, Jules Schiller.
Limo and Ange, great to have you on Grandstand, enjoying the show.
It's great to have the chance to share that with you again on Grandstand AFL, wherever you're listening around the country.
Let's head up to Queensland, where we find Quentin Hull. And where, Quentin, the Gold Coast Suns are almost playing a home game.
Yes, hello, Limo and Jake. It's a very interesting scenario here. We've got three games of top-flight football in the Queensland capital today, none of which are being hosted by the teams in residence. Of course, the Lions are in Melbourne ready to take on the Dogs at Docklands, yet the Suns come up the M1 to play Melbourne at the Gabba. And meanwhile, we've got the Melbourne Storm and the Manly Sea Eagles co-hosting an NRL doubleheader featuring games against the Titans and the Broncos. So it's a bit of a weird one for the weekend here.
It is indeed. Are the Gold Coast any chance against Melbourne?
Some, yeah. You'd have to think even more so if they had Tom Lynch on deck, but they get Stephen May back, and that's going to be a real help. And, of course, the Demons only just got out of jail against the Lions up at the Gabba in the early phases of the season. So, obviously, Melbourne deserves to be favourite, but having seen a fair bit of the Suns this year and been in Ballarat last week, they weren't too far away from the Dogs. I mean, how you measure that form, you have to also look at where the Bulldogs are on the table. But the thing about Stuart Dew's Gold Coast, they seem to be a lot more of an even prospect from week to week. There's not this hot and cold that we saw certainly in their early days in their infancy when they were just young footballers, and even during the Rodney Eade tenure. I think Stuart Dew's got them singing all from the same hymn book. We know that their pressure will be pretty good today. It has been throughout the season. So D's fans, take an element of concern into this one when you tune into us later on this afternoon.
And what about Brisbane? Can they cause an upset there? They're playing some very good footy. They just haven't been able to get a win on board.
Well, how do you want to look at it? 0-7 and no hope, or within three goal, within a kick of being three wins on the board? Because, as I mentioned, you know, they got level with Melbourne in that last quarter at the Gabba, only to go down. They were within a kick against the Suns and lost by 5 points. And then, of course, Dane Beams drew them level last Sunday in that cracker against Collingwood before the Pies kicked the last goal of the game. So, you know, winning's a habit, losing's a habit. This is a young team. And we see in sport that quite often it's the young teams that struggle to get into the winning habit, or the teams that have had a sustained period of a lack of success. And we know that that is the case for Brisbane. So I don't know whether still that they're at the point where it's going to just click and things will happen really quickly for them, but that they keep certainly asking questions of teams that we think are more better credentialed than them, particularly at the Gabba. I mean, at Docklands tonight, I mean, I know it's freezing down there. They'll have the roof closed, and you'd reckon these two young teams will ping it around a bit. So I'd be hopeful that we'll get an entertaining game.
Just a quick, very quick answer on this, if you can. Which team do you think is further advanced? Out of the Suns and the Lions.
Gold Coast.
On talent?
When you get the best list playing, they've got I love Harris Andrews, but I think Stephen May's ahead of him. I think Tom Lynch is a superstar of the competition. Whether he stays is an entirely different conversation. And they've got more depth through the middle, Jake. So at the moment, I'd go with Gold Coast, but that may change, of course, if we get news of Tom Lynch's future later in the year.
Because I would have thought Brisbane's younger group is probably better.
Yeah, I think in a long term, you know, there's essentially two questions. Who's more of a chance to make the finals first? I'd think Gold Coast. Who's more in a chance of having a sustained period of relevance? Well, you know, probably Brisbane. But if you ask me, you know, next year, if I could choose one team out of Gold Coast or Brisbane to make the eight, if Tom Lynch stays, it would be Gold Coast.
Quentin Hull, thank you very much there in Queensland. Now let's head over to Western Australia. Brett Sprigg, a lot of focus on the Fremantle Football Club this week, particularly the press conference yesterday. Do you think it will affect the playing group at all this weekend?
Yeah, well, Limo, these past few weeks have been a PR nightmare for the club. Obviously, this sexual harassment case, which the club really only finally addressed yesterday. A couple of weeks ago, there was the Ross Glendinning medal fiasco with West Coast, which was pretty big over here. They didn't look too good out of that either, the Dockers. And also this week, we learned about Bradley Hill, their reigning best and fairest winner, who got in some trouble for a night out, breaching a move-on notice and allegedly providing a false name to police, during which time he was supposed to be rehabbing an injury. So the brand has taken a hit. It's never been synonymous with success in this part of the country, and it has left people questioning the overall culture of the club. But as you say, it's up to the players to go and restore some pride in the jumper. They get St Kilda at a vulnerable time, winless in their past six starts. So I think tonight's game at Perth Stadium should be a pretty evenly fought contest.
Yeah, absolutely. We're looking forward to an absolute ripper there. Thank you very much, Brett Sprigg in WA. And let's head to Adelaide, where there is the showdown. Jules Schiller, is Adelaide managing to contain itself ahead of today's showdown?
Yes, Limo, and hi, Ange and Jake as well. It's a new trophy. It's called the Variety Showdown Shield this year, guys. And there's an image on it which depicts one of the most famous moments in showdown history, which is the punch on at the Ramsgate Hotel, which is good to... No, it's Troy and Shane Bond, arm in arm. Showdown 2, I think that was. But this, of course, is a Port home game, which means the crowd is slightly more unstable, more passionate, less pensioner, less soft cheeses, more premixes. But look, the banter has already begun in Adelaide. On the Port Adelaide website, Ollie Wines has said, "One thing we are good at is responding after a poor performance." And a Crows fan has written, "Well, I guess you've had plenty of practice." So look, it's always so exciting here. But look, the form going in is pretty stark for both teams. Well, Port have lost three of their last four, and the Crows have won three of their last four. So the Crows are favourite, but Port are so unstable and so inconsistent this year. Who knows?
And it's remarkable, isn't it, Jules, how even these contests have been over the years. It's almost like form doesn't matter coming into a showdown because the tally sits at 22-21.
Yes, well, the last one, you know, guys, was a big blowout, and Port have been on notice about their contested possessions. They got slammed in the midfield the last couple, so Ken Hinckley has really kind of stepped up. He's talked about the contested ball and how they're going to go in hard, but still, the Crows midfield has been so good, even with all the new players that have come in. It's hard to see Port winning, but you don't know which Port Adelaide is going to show up.
Historically, it has been close, but the last five, Adelaide has won by an average margin of 35 points. So that suggests a trend away from the close showdowns, and hopefully that trend continues. Jake?
Yeah, I'm just going to ask, Powell Pepper coming back in should make a difference.
Yeah, and that's been really interesting. They've got Rockcliffe as well, Jake, coming in, obviously Wingard, Tom Cleary. So there's a lot of ins for Port Adelaide. But one of the talking points in Adelaide has been about the sledging of Sam Powell-Pepper. And Don Pike was asked, you know, will there be a ban on sledging like there is in the Australian cricket team? And he kind of refused to say no. He just said that there's a line and he hopes the players will respect that. So that's been a big talking point after Powell-Pepper has been sledged in the Sandfall.
How are Crows fans dealing with the mystery Rory Sloane foot injury?
You know, whenever you name an injury after some kind of continental doctor, it's called a Lidfranc injury, you know you're in trouble. And the talk here is whether Sloane will get his $1 million. I mean, this is the injury that Dane Swan suffered that put his career to an end. So it's been described as complex. Mm. But Don Pike thinks he'll be out for a couple of weeks. But yes, there's a lot of concern over this.
Jules Schiller, thank you very much there in South Australia. Ange Pipos has breaking news on the Luke Parker potential suspension.
Michael Christian has just messaged me. Parker has been cleared. I repeat, Parker has been cleared by the match review officer.
There we go.
Wow.
I'm a bit surprised.
I'm surprised. I thought he'd get a week.
That is fascinating stuff. Interesting, isn't it? Parker cleared. Ryan Burton cleared. Tom Mitchell cleared.
He's not a hanging judge.
Yeah, Nick Nat on the tackle. Get suspended.
I think we'll be hearing plenty about that.
Yeah, I think we will.